This is the E of Real Estate. My name is Wenee Stevens, I'm your host, and our guest today is Jan Ciszek, and we are in London. Jan Ciszek is a leading international feng shui consultant and expert, trainer, mentor, researcher, and writer. He has more than 35 years of experience in feng shui, and a background in interior design, design and branding, electromagnetics and geopathics, as well as a master's degree in environmental psychology. He specializes in holistic and integral feng shui, which works in many domains: environmental, or physical, emotional, intellectual, or psychologically, social, cultural, virtual, and even spiritual. Jan is one of the very few feng shui consultants in the world with a master's degree in environmental psychology, and thereby combining the scientific rigor of the West to the ancient Eastern art of feng shui. Therefore, most of his advice is evidence-based, so you can trust and have confidence that it will work, because it's based on many research. Jan has a UK government Ofqual accredited diploma in practical spirituality and wellness, which is an evidence-based discipline and also works as a spiritual health mentor. Apart from the feng shui and environmental psychology expertise, Jan is also an accelerated learning expert and speed reading coach. And his passion is optimizing learning and work environments. That's actually the main reason that we are together today. Yes. So welcome, Jan.
Thank you for having me.
And in this podcast, we will explore the application of feng shui in learning and work environment, and then specifically for campus and university campuses. In how can it be used to boost the user experience, maybe even well-being and study outcome. I understood that you have a own formula of feng shui. It's equal to energy, intention, and ritual. And in your work, you incorporate three feng shui schools of thought: the classical one, the modern one, and a virtual feng shui, plus environmental psychology. How do they differ from each other? Of course, there's a lot of ingredients.
Of course. So let's start with feng shui. So for people who never had the time, it means wind, water. It's a Chinese concept. Although people who build, anywhere in the world have built buildings, they use similar principles. They might not use them as feng shui principles, but they use similar principles to kind of optimize the environment for working or living. Probably the best definition of feng shui comes actually from Winston Churchill. He said, "We shape our buildings, thereafter they shape us." So in essence, anything that we do physically, in any environment, whether it's indoor or outdoor, will affect people on a physical level, emotional, mental, spiritual, performance-wise, in different ways. Yeah, and that's what environmental psychology has been studying for over 100 years. Feng shui has been going for like 3,000-4,000 years, and people just observe certain environments better for them than others, and that's how it all started. But there's obviously a huge overlap between environmental psychology and feng shui, because they study the same thing. They study the relationship between people and any environments, and that includes virtual environments, you know, online. Yeah, that's a different environment, and now obviously we're moving into virtual learning environments, and that's going to be a very important aspect in terms of creating the right environment so people can learn much faster and more efficiently.
Yeah, actually, before we dive into the physical part, let's stay with this virtual part. So you say in a way that those 1,000 years of experience in feng shui in the physical environment can also be applied in the digital environment nowadays, so in the digital workplace. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
So obviously it's a different environment. People will probably wear certain headset, VR headset, and there will be experiences like, you know, we could do this in the future. You'll be in your home in the Netherlands, I'll be here in London, and we could have exactly the same experience. Yeah, so that's where technology is going, with obviously with artificial intelligence and singularity, where at some point, maybe 30 years from now, we won't be able to tell the difference between physical reality and virtual reality. That's where we're going. And obviously that would be very useful because you can have virtual teachers. You can have any teachers. You can design them actually. Yeah? And they will teach you whatever you want to learn from your home or from wherever you are. So obviously the latest kind of headset, still kind of clunky and expensive. I've got one and it's about £500. But next year probably be £100. And it'll be lighter, more efficient, and literally it still see, like, you know, reality is kind of pixelated because of the game kind of environments, but it's going to get better and better and better. It's just a question of time. It's not if, it's just when. So in the future, people have a choice. Obviously, people like to meet in person and have an exchange, social exchange, but most people will be probably learning from their homes or from wherever they are. And that will change completely the whole setup. Because already, you know, most universities don't have libraries because it's cheaper to give people, you know, iPads or tablets with all the books as opposed to running the library. It's a very expensive experience. The same with buildings, yeah? So obviously, we can learn from physical sort of aspects how to build those virtual environments. But people will be in charge. Students, I can create my own environment. I'll be able to customize it 100% to what my style of learning is. Mm. And I can learn in any time. At the moment, people have to go to university, set time, professors, all that stuff, it's fixed. Mm-hmm. There's obviously some choice, people can adjust that, but literally, they have to adjust to the environment. In the future, we'll be adjusting the environment to our learning styles. And that's a big, big jump in education. Because at the moment, when you see how education has been going on for, you know, 200 years, it's the teacher that knows, or the system that knows, and the student that doesn't know. And kind of exchange, kind of one-way exchange. But in the future, the whole thing will kind of be blurry, and you know, you'll be creating the knowledge at the same time. And obviously, if you have the headset, and the headset can monitor what's happening in your brain and how you're learning, and it can adjust you, give you feedback. Oh, today maybe it's not a good idea to do the tests on maths or whatever, because your biorhythm or some other metrics that the device will sensor, maybe it's not a good day for you. Maybe do it another day. So it'll be you have a neurofeedback at the same time, monitoring what's happening in your body via heart rate variability for your breathing and your brainwave pattern to adjust the learning environment. And so people learn much, much faster. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, but I hear that there are a few challenges to start with the academic staff at this moment, because they have to change first their way of teaching. So although the technology is almost there, I think the human aspect is a big thing.
Yeah, but people, you know, once it's so real that actually this will be real to you and to me, and we won't be able to tell the difference. Mm. I'm not saying it's tomorrow, probably 10, 20, 30 years from now. Mm. Then, you know, you'll have the same kind of interaction. And, you know, people already get hooked on games and stuff, and they have that sort of experience because a lot of it's happening in your brain, in your mind anyway. I'm not seeing, you're obviously outside of me, but I'm seeing you inside of me.
Yeah.
So it'll be a jump because obviously they need to make money.
Yeah.
But already it's changing because most of the courses are free online. Mm-hmm. Obviously, universities make money from certification, you get a diploma or, you know, degree or whatever, and that's how it works. But, you know, most of that information you can find now online free.
Yeah. So the second part that will influence is the number of square meters, because when you can study anywhere, you don't need that much space in one spot, in one campus.
Exactly.
And but can you also use it the other way around, that to enhance or to quicken the process, that build already an environment that is inviting to use this technology?
Of course, yeah, because you can have augmented reality where you still have a headset. It will be very small, like glasses probably, and you in a physical environment, and that's already there. So you can see things in your environment that are not there, and you can learn, you can interact, you know. Mm. You know, people already using that for learning anatomy, so they can see bodies in front of them. The virtual bodies, there's nothing there, but because of the augmented reality, mixing, you know, different modalities, you can actually learn much faster as opposed to traditional way of books. Books are kind of old-fashioned now. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. But we'll see how we'll go.
Suppose that one of our listeners is in charge of a university and is thinking by himself, that sounds really interesting. what could I do to speed up the process? What could I do in my physical environment at this moment to come closer to this ideal situation, but also in the meantime, enhance the student experience and the experience, user experience of the staff.
So obviously we can learn a lot from environment psychology, a lot of studies in terms of how to optimize any environment, whether it's for studying or working. So lots of, and feng shui has some insights as well, which are confirmed by the research. So for example, if people in campuses personalize the environment, so you know, new students move into a campus and you can measure how quickly they personalize the rooms. So if they kind of engage and put posters and make sure that the little rooms look like homes and they feel comfortable, they stay longer, they don't drop out. Students who don't personalize their rooms in the first 3 to 6 months, they drop out. So there's a very simple test, you know, you can measure that, but also you can help people with understanding it, because they obviously new environment and it needs some kind of enhancements, you know. So that's a simple kind of way to that. But to answer your questions, I think it's to do with the technology. So technology become easier and cheaper, and students will ask for it. Obviously, universities might be a bit resistant because they, most universities run out of businesses, which is fine. They need to make money. But, you know, obviously that will cut down the cost of all kinds of things, you know. And if you've got a virtual teacher, not a physical teacher, run by artificial intelligence, and that virtual teacher will know more than any professor because they will have access to all information, and they can, that virtual teacher will adjust your learning style to whatever you need to learn, depending what you want, and with all kinds of neurofeedback from the body of the students, then it's a big game changer. So,
what is your experience in making your workspace more personal? Like when nowadays it's more hot desking.
So actually, that's the opposite of what we want. So the same story in workplaces. I've been doing it for over 35 years. I've done probably 10,000 consultation, homes and businesses. So I've got a lot of experience in office space. And obviously it's very easy to measure. You know? You allow people to personalize the space so they can put stuff, whatever they want on the desk. Doesn't matter. There's no real restriction, maybe not crazy things that can be distracting for other people. But you know, just pictures of the favorite pet or child, whatever. And then you can measure actually how quick, how efficient they are, how happy they are, and so on. I can go to any office, and just by looking at what's on the people's desk, I can tell how they're going to perform. Because I know what happens, you know, in people's mind. People like to have a place where it feels like home. Obviously, you know, we're in, here in this hotel in London, and, you know, they're trying to make it as homely as possible because you feel like home. That's what you want to create, yeah? But also you want to allow people to adjust the environment. So one of the key things for people to be more efficient is the size of the monitor, but also the ergonomics of how the monitor is placed. So most monitors are too low. So people looking down, and basically when you look down, you tilt your head, so there's more pressure on the muscles at the back of your head, and obviously those muscles, most people don't know, are responsible for processing information. So if you've got monitor kind of in the middle of your eye line, you sit properly, there's your dopamine level works better, hormones works better, you know, because you're upright, and basically your performance can go up 30%, and that's measurable. So very simple, just adjusting the monitor. Obviously, it depends on the design, because some monitors you can't extend, but you can put some books underneath the stand. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And people pay me a lot of money to do this simple intervention. Anybody can do it. But you see, I notice that people who take charge and then engage the environment and they really like what they're doing, they do that themselves. You don't. You don't. Obviously, you can tell people, but they just know physically it feels better to do that. Simple intervention.
What
Mega
about
change.
What about electric electromagnetic field due to Wi-Fi and,
So
and other equipment?
So
they cannot change that by themselves.
Yeah. So obviously there is that's a big issue, and all the scientists agree that in electromagnetic radiation is one of the biggest problems. Yeah, because it's going to be more and more and more. We really completely wired the house, will be completely wired, and so on. So that's a fact. Lots of studies, probably 30,000 studies of of dangers for electromagnetic radiation. And in the last 10 years, the increase of the radiation that our bodies being saw is one quintillion. That's one in 18 zeros. That's Professor Ola Johansson from Karolinska Institute in Sweden. So there's a radiation kind of bombarding our bodies. So you obviously, so breaks, you know, getting out of your computer, going to space, you know, if you've got a park nearby, getting kind of decompressed, and more offices have spaces where people can relax. So they're away from this electromagnetic radiation. Yeah. So obviously, we bombard with it, but you can optimize your environment with breaks, with special safe spaces that people can kind of decompress or detox from that. Yeah. And another thing that they've discovered is that when people are grounded, they're less affected by radiation. So there are a lot of mats that you can ground yourself. Obviously, you need to install it properly so you can measure it before and after. But it's an interesting concept. Like in Finland, where they have one of the best education systems in the world, one of the key factors that help students to perform better is to have no shoes in the classroom. Yeah, because they're grounded. The more comfortable they feel like at home, the more relaxed, kids like that sort of thing, they got more contact, and they're kind of more calmer, yeah? So one school in England, I don't remember the name now, but they did this because, you know, they could. And again, they noticed a huge increase in well-being of wellness of students. They're much more relaxed, they're calmer, they had better marks, and so on. Just one thing, no shoes in the classroom.
Now you tipped to an interesting point. So we were talking about the digital environment and the physical environment a little bit, but now it's the social environment, so the individual themselves. So taking off the shoes is a good thing to ground and to balance.
And it's a little
Are there more things like meditation or other things?
Oh, yeah. So
quick reading?
So lots of other sort of simple things that most schools, you know, universities are different, can do it. So, for example, they teach now mindfulness, relaxation techniques, you know, is very important because kids are stressed, you know. There's a lot of, in this country at least, about exams. There's a lot of pressure on kids. For example, you know, like little children, 7 years old, they have to read like 70 words per minute. Also, you know, you mentioned speed reading coach, so I know a lot about that as well. And there's a lot of stress for that, you know. What can you do? Play. Play is the key to learning environments. Kids love playing. They've done a study a long, long time ago. They went to like 50 countries in different schools. They asked kids one question: what do you want to do at school? They all the same said the same thing: play. If universities were like play, they would love it. Organize your space in such a way that kind of playful, not sitting. So kids are not designed to sit for, you know, whatever, 1 hour at a desk. They want to run around, and you see them. So when we sometimes teach speed reading in one school, and when they have problem with concentration, whatever, we send them to playground for 5 minutes, just run around, play a bit, come back, and they're calmer, they can focus better. So play is the key. There's a experimental school in Paris where there are no teachers, no headmaster, no curriculum. They have a nice space, good food, because kids are rubbish with eating good stuff, and they give them tasks, and they teach themselves. So collaborative learning is very important, and they mix kind of things, so probably like from 12 to maybe 18, and they get tasks, you know, design a game, do that, and they have to figure out how to do it themselves, because they create an environment where learning can happen, you know, as opposed to kind of top-down view. Yeah, this is the environment, this is what you have to learn, you know, you need to, people are different, people learn in different styles, and people ideally need to adjust, you know, the environment to their needs, as opposed to the other way around.
So you are probably also an advocate that you can create an environment that sparks curiosity.
Oh, absolutely.
In students.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you have any examples of that?
Well, obviously you can play, make it more interesting, allow people to do whatever they want to do. People are different, they have different learning style, and they know already how they need to learn. Some kids like to sit at desk, some people like to lie down on the floor. So create an environment where all those things are possible and ask them. It's very simple. Just ask them what they want, yeah? But one thing that makes a difference, books. So they've done studies where just presence of books brings that curiosity in mind. They don't have to read the books, just having books. Yeah? And another study said that, you know, in homes, 80% people feel good about having books around. They haven't read them. It doesn't matter. You can have, obviously, nice to read them as well. But just having books around and kind of interesting things create that sort of environment so people are curious, you know, and they do things. Plus, they need to do things, not just sit or read, you know. Mm-hmm. They need to be highly interactive so they can do whatever they want to do, basically. And that's already happening in offices. There are offices, and you might see in some pictures of, you know, Google offices or other big companies where they have slides, you know, kind of playful grounds. The adults can play like kids, you know. Yeah. But it doesn't matter whether they do it or not. Just to have that visually, even if it's in peripheral vision, creates that kind of sense of curiosity, brings you back as kids. I mean, kids are very, very creative naturally. You don't need to really kind of encourage them. You just need to stop not to create environments that kind of stop that curiosity.
And to awaken the child in the adults also.
Exactly. In one study, they were trying to, I think it was actually architects, I remember that it was a long time ago, they wanted to boost creativity, let's say, in architects, yeah? And they noticed that kids like to run in a particular way in on staircase, yeah? So when you look at kids, when they walk around, they never walk like adults. They kind of skip, they play, they kind of, because they want to do something, yeah? They're playful, yeah? So they ask children to train those architects, very serious guys, to run the staircase in a playful way. Yeah, and that's so they obviously tested their creativity before and after, and just one simple thing that they learn how to run going down the staircase. Obviously, it's physical as well, boosts your all the other hormones that are important for learning, but in a playful way, and they notice big increase in creativity. One simple thing, but kids do it naturally. Just copy what kids do.
Yeah, speaking about copying, I know a little bit about feng shui, that. Putting picture of nature or water on the wall is already similar as what you were talking about, putting books there.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously in hospitals, they've noticed a long time ago that people who have a bed near the window, they recover quicker. Even if there's no beautiful view, could be just a wall. Yeah. But just having a window near the bed boosts the recovery. Yeah. So obviously hospitals can have that. So they start to introduce posters with landscape. And interesting enough, the brain can't take much difference. So if you, whether you're seeing a beautiful landscape through a window or a beautiful, like a wallpaper, a beautiful landscape, you know, it could be a beach or meadow or woods, the same kind of effect happens, yeah? And it's called biophilia effect. So nature is amazing. Obviously, nature is fractal and our bodies are fractal, so we like that sort of pattern thing in nature. So very simple, just having pictures of landscape, posters, anything that kind of, but even nature, you know, plants, you know, kind of that connects you. And that connects you with the spiritual dimension of your life. And now you mentioned I'm also a spiritual health mentor, and the UK government recognizes that need. So I can work in the healthcare, government, and education, because there's that need for another dimension. So spirituality is defined as something bigger than you personally. So nature is bigger than this, than you. You know, your planet is bigger, the whole universe is bigger than you. So having that sort of connection with life, by definition, makes you a spiritual person. You know, obviously, they've done a lot of studies. Probably like now, there was originally 3,300 Cy Conning in 2012 done the studies on the benefits of spirituality and religion, but there are more studies now. And very simple, you know, nature will kind of activate your spiritual awareness,
you mentioned,
transpersonal kind of part.
Yeah, you mentioned the fractal, and so in fact, you could say there's a resonance. We are resonating with something else.
They've done a study actually. An interesting study where they showed people fractals, so little patterns, you know, very complex, but basically fractality is a measure of complexity. There's actually software you can measure that. One of my projects when I was studying on environment psychology was to how to measure fractality of the environment, because the more complex the environment, the better for us. Yeah. So when you see a building has got nice ornaments, we feel good about it. Yeah. But if it's like a boring flat building, people don't engage with that. You know, obviously, because of the money, you know, they now design very simple buildings because it's easier now. But in the old days, old architecture, all the little ornaments, they put, there's more energy into that. They put more energy into it, and you can see it. So it kind of resonates better. But basically, so they showed the pictures of fractals, very simple patterns, yeah, and asked people, do you like it or don't like it? Yeah. So they said yes or no. And then they asked them, how do you like yourself? People who like fractals like themselves more. Because we are fractal, your lungs are fractal, your brain is fractal. Not everything is fractal, but most of nature is fractal, and you can measure that. So if you like a fractal image, means that you like yourself. And if you like yourself, obviously your self-esteem is going to be better, you perform better, you're happier, you might think that you are, you know, more lucky or fortunate and all that stuff. So that will affect your back into your performance. Yeah.
We addressed that the connection between humans and the built environment, even the digital environment. So when you feel well and as a human, it has an effect on your performance.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course. And
and buildings influence behavior. There's no doubt about it. There's lots of studies. It's not, I'm still surprised that, you know, I think architects should be taught a bit of, you know, environment psychology, some of the basic things. Obviously, they have constraint because of the construction and money and all that stuff. I don't doubt that, you know, architects wouldn't want to design good buildings, yeah? But obviously, there are constraints, yeah? And they have to probably conform to certain standards and so on. But, you know, obviously, the health of the building, the healthier the people, better performance, less absenteeism. So I'm doing study now with my, I'm working on my PhD. We're going to look at different aspects of principles of feng shui and how they can be applied in office environments, you know, workspace environments, to boost productivity or just reduce stress. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Very simple things, you know, I already mentioned a couple of. Yeah? Another thing is that the size of the monitor. So they've done studies where they shown that women need bigger monitors. For men, somehow it doesn't make a difference, yeah? But women perform much better on bigger. Now, again, you can increase efficiency of a female worker up to 30% by giving them you know, a bigger monitor. It's not a big deal. It's not a, now monitors are so cheap, you know. But performance and productivity is very important. And obviously now the biggest headache for companies is staff retention. A lot of people get trained and work and they leave, yeah, and that costs a lot of money. So to keep people happy, companies spend loads of money to make the most interesting environments. You know, you've seen probably, you know, Apple or new headquarters, everything, you know. Now the people can, because they want them to actually stay there all the time. They don't want them to actually leave the work because then obviously work more. So that's what they're doing. Yeah? But all those things can help, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's also a lack of awareness between in management teams. Most of the times I see the built environment as an operational headache.
Exactly.
Instead of a strategic opportunity.
Opportunity, yeah.
And only when you go into the figures of a company, you will see that on average there's only about 10% is accommodation costs.
Yes.
All in.
Yes.
And employee cost is 70 to 80%.
Exactly.
So it makes sense to put more emphasis on that part.
Of course, yeah.
Than on the build cost and squeeze them more and then frustrate the 70, 80%.
Well, I'm talking about you know, companies like Steve Jobs, late Steve Jobs. He knew that creativity was important to him. And he made, in one of his early office, he made a little intervention. He put a toilet in the middle of the office. That's not good design, because you don't put the toilet in the middle. But what he wanted, because people meet that, yeah, and he wanted to create, he could have put like a water cooler and people will still meet. So, and a lot of conversation, creative ideas come when people, different people meet in one space. So creating a right space where people can meet, exchange ideas, bounce the ideas, is very important, yeah. So it's very simple, you know, obviously innovation is the key in any business, you know. Business is not innovating, it's not going to last for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But kind of wellness and well-being of employees is even more important, because if you get good staff, they'll stay and they'll be creative and so on.
So actually you could use wayfinding through a building that on the junctions where people meet, so the elevator, the toilets, the coffee machine, parking space, when you create an incentive there, an impulse, that they interact with you.
Yeah, for example, so all buildings have to have staircases for fire regulations, but nobody uses them, yeah? How do you encourage people to use the, it's a natural way to go, I always use staircase, I am going in a tube, you know, I'll go, unless I'm in a hurry, I'll go, but always use the staircase. And some, you know, you're like 200 steps, yeah? Good exercise, I'm usually utilizing, I don't have to go to a gym, you know, and I use it. So if you can create an interesting staircase and encourage people to go, tell them what it will do, going down, up, you kind of make it fun, and you're utilizing natural structure of the building for something positive. Very simple.
Indeed. Yeah. So actually the main thing or to start with is intention and attention.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to cost much.
No. Plants don't cost much. Yeah. Obviously, you know, if it's a big office, it's better to hire a company to manage the plants, because if you get somebody or cleaners to do that, might work, might not. So you need to make sure that all the plants are. Big problem nowadays in London especially, air pollution. Also, they've done recent studies that in the New York University that pollution affect children's pupils' performance in terms of the exams. So they start install air purifiers, and kids have better results. Very simple. In London, unfortunately, today 25 people will die just from the pollution alone. 10,000 a year. Mm. It's bad. It's bad, yeah. And obviously the guy is trying to do much, but it's not enough. So you can do other things, you know, like, you know, purifiers. They're not that expensive. That will make the big difference. But also plants, you know. So lots of NASA has done research on purifying plants, like spider plants, peaslies. The list is very long. Just have some plants that kind of purify. People feel much better. Having just plants around boosts creativity. Mm-hmm. Differently for men, different for women. But it's about 15 to 20% boost in creativity. Just having plants around. Mm-hmm. I mean, how difficult is that, you know? Mm-hmm.
But it needs a holistic approach still.
Of course, yeah.
You mentioned a lot of interventions, single interventions, but when you combine them, the whole is more than the sum of the parts.
Absolutely, yeah.
How do you approach that? That it is a holistic approach?
You start with the whole. So you start with the big picture. You see, obviously you need to analyze what the office or campus need, what's happening, because they will have some data in terms of the, you know, productivity, wellness, and it's very easy to run the surveys, so people will tell you what's going on. And then you look at where, and then you find kind of intervention points. What's the where you get the best benefits, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's just introducing just nature, but you analyze what's happening, you notice where the problem is. It's not that difficult. Most of it's just common sense.
Yes, I
know?
Agree.
And people will tell you, you know, people, oh, we need a nice canteen. We need, I mean, I've been to offices and I got better coffee in the office than in outside in special shop that specialize in it. Mm-hmm. So they put a lot of money to a super duper coffee machine. People are happy.
Yeah. So. And again, it is only on average 10% the whole accommodation cost, including that super duper coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it is, easy.
Flexible now, obviously, you know, the dress code is different in the old days. You have to have, you know, obviously some professions still have that, yeah. But kind of relaxing that, people are more creative, kind of, you know. You don't want to have your collar all the time, and you know, it's like you can't breathe, you know. It's not comfortable, yeah. Mm-hmm. People don't think like that, yeah. So.
What have been your biggest struggles or challenges when you address those three subcategories? So physical, digital, and the social environment. And how have you overcome them?
Well, so I already mentioned, so some of the things are kind of easy to do. So allowing people to personalize the desk or space is quite easy. Now, physical environments, like, you know, improving the lighting. Lighting is massive, yeah? So good quality lighting, not fluorescent, which flickers, affects the brains. We know how it works. It's not good, you know. Obviously, it's cheap, but it's not good. So good quality LED warm lighting or natural lighting will affect. So obviously, some of the kind of interventions are more expensive than others, but it's all measurable, yeah? So it's really how to communicate the results or the benefits to the managers so they spend some money. Basically, but we've got the research. I've got the research from environmental psychology. Most of the companies call me because of feng shui. Yeah, most of the people haven't heard of environmental psychology. You know, they know obviously what psychology is, but not environmental psychology. So, but I've got all the data, so I can present it, and they, oh, interesting, and we can sort of start small with some, especially if it's a big office, we can just start with one space. But usually they call me before they move in, so we can have a kind of holistic approach, I can suggest all those things at the beginning. So.
Yes. Yes.
When they build the offices or arrange it, it's already good. So, you know, materials, picking the right colors, that's simple. You know, you have to have something on the walls. Obviously, images as well affect people. You know, a lot of our offices have those kind of corporate slogans. Nobody reads them. It's better to have nature, people enjoying themselves, kind of happy images. That will affect people in a more positive way. It's priming effect. Than just having kind of statements, you know. People don't respond to that so well. Yeah. So what else? Electromagnetic radiation is a big thing because that's very difficult to monitor. So you can shield a lot of, you know, if people have money, you know, if companies have money, they could shield a lot of that. Yeah. So, but in big offices, it's a big problem. Yeah. And now there's more electrosensitivity. So research suggests that 30% of the population already are electrosensitive. We're all electrosensitive because your body runs on electricity. Mm-hmm. Even chemical reactions in your body are electromagnetic. Yeah? Mm-hmm. We're just electromagnetic machines. Yeah, and our bodies. But 3% of those 30% know that they're electrosensitive, yeah, and they're sick. Yeah, they couldn't be here. There's like, you know, radiation here. They couldn't be here. They have to shield all kinds of things. Yeah, so that's going to be the biggest problem. Yeah, because it will become sometimes already recognized. Yeah, and so that will be a big challenge. How to create environments? I think there will be little kind of pods where people go and just maybe for 20 minutes. Just decompress in an environment where there's no electromagnetic radiation, electrosmog, yeah? And that kind of helps, you know? Because if you've got that space, your body can accommodate. Obviously, you know, been bombarded with that radiation for some time now, but, you know, you need a good space to kind of detox, and sleep is important, yeah? Most people don't switch off the Wi-Fi for the night. Mm. Are you using the Wi-Fi at night? No, switch it off. Mm. It's so easy. You can, in your settings, you can set it up. Goes off at midnight, comes on again at whatever time in the morning, yeah?
And then hopefully the neighbors do the same.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's another thing, yeah. So, I mean, I switch it off all the time if I use it, yeah? I've got everything wired, yeah? So I'm just like, but, you know, I can see how many networks overlap me. But so I took precautions, yeah? Mm. I've got some things that I can ground myself. Simple remedy for everybody. They notice that they ask people who are electrosensitive, when do you not have the symptoms when you're electrosensitive? And they all said more or less the same thing. When are we having a bath? When you're having a bath, you ground it. Mm-hmm. There's about 20 odd papers on the benefits of grounding. When you ground it, when you're walking barefoot on the beach or on grass, you ground it basically. There's exchange of electrons. The mechanics is very simple. It's measurable, yeah? So when people are grounded, they're kind of less affected by the electromagnetic radiation. So quite often, I know it's not fully ecological, but you know, I have a bath. Obviously, when you're having a bath, you're using more water. You know, a shower is kind of more efficient. Yeah, mm-hmm. But having a bath, you know, I measured myself. You know, I've got equipment to measure myself when I was outside of the bath and when I was in the bath, how grounded I was. Yeah, and you feel better. Obviously, you can put some Epsom salts, which has magnesium, and that kind of replenish magnesium that we lose when you stress. You know, there's a lot of stresses. You know, basically, environmental psychology and feng shui is about one thing: how to reduce those stressors. Just by reducing the stressors, people have been functioning normally. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Obviously, you can enhance it in different ways, you know, if you need that, yeah. If people need to be creative, you can do all kinds of things to enhance humans' creativity. Yeah?
But probably by bringing down the stress, it brings it already back to
we're all curious.
A good standard,
exactly. Yeah.
Most because it's now out of balance.
It's like famously Steve Jobs, they proposed, like, let's do some feng shui, just create our environment. And he finally said, like, we're already creative, we don't need a creative environment. Yeah. But he was aware of it. So, but the latest building, it's got some issues. It's designed by a famous company, architects. And there's one biggest problem that they had glass walls. Yeah. And unfortunately, people walking with the mobile phone, they were just bumping into those glass walls. So a lot of people put a lot of post-it notes not to bump glass. Bad design. They should have thought about it. Because a lot of people you see on the street, people walk and they... And that's another thing. People, because we're using little devices, our peripheral vision is... We're losing peripheral vision. And peripheral vision is important for survival, but also for the brain that works. You know, when you have nice, beautiful view, your peripheral vision is open. Your brain works differently. Mm. Yeah? For reading, for speed reading, one of the techniques we teach is how to open your peripheral vision. So you see more text, your brain has more information to process, there's more understanding, you can read faster. But if you read one word at a time, if I speak to you one word at a time, like most people, it will drive you mad. It's not good. Yeah. So, and that's the problem. Yeah. So, so kind of big windows, good, but you need to have nice view as well. Helps, yeah.
You have more than 35 years experience in all this. Is there something or are there some things that you would have liked to know much earlier in your career?
So the key thing that made a big difference was, which I like to, now I'm doing it, is speed reading. So I was already a good speed reader. When I was young, and I loved reading. I was born in Poland, and we had like two television programs, so obviously we had films and stuff, but one of the main sources of information was books. So I loved reading, and something like 20 years ago, I did a course in America, in something called photo reading, which is basically branded name for speed reading. And it made the biggest difference for my life, because now I can read more. I've got a library of probably 20,000 books, you know, I can read as much as I want, and I've got better quality information. So if I knew that earlier, obviously I've got better information earlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had one student, actually 12-year-old boy, and he said, he was only 12, and he was reading after the course, two-day course, 20 times faster. And he said, I wish I'd done this course when I was 8. Yeah. I've wasted so much time. Everybody could benefit from that. This mm-hmm. should be taught. That's one of the things that should be taught at university level, any level, yeah? Speaking, because, you know, we have to read. Still have. At some point in the future, probably we won't have to read. But at the moment, we still have to process written information. It's still one of the best ways to get information. But you get books, and you can get knowledge from books, which is great, but also you get wisdom. Mm. What's the difference?
Yes.
That's the key. That's the key to actually how you pick better books. Because you want books with more wisdom rather than knowledge. So the difference is, and you already know that, you know, if I ask you one question, you know, I ask that my students, speaking students, all the time. It's like, what's the difference between, knowledge and wisdom? And they come up with all kinds of explanations, yeah? But there's only one difference, and that's to do with time. If I ask you, which one is timeless, wisdom or knowledge, which one is timeless?
The wisdom.
Exactly. You knew it. I asked 5-year-old children, and they said the same thing.
Yeah.
They know internally. We know internally. So wisdom has longevity. So buy books or read books that were relevant like 100 years ago. Because probably they will be relevant in 100 years, maybe. You know? So like prevention is better than cure. So the same what we're talking about, you know, just kind of optimizing the environment so they're healthy, first of all, yeah, people will naturally thrive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Obviously, adding other things that we know about how the brain works, how to boost the productivity, creativity, innovation, will just be extra, you know, kind of icing on the cake. Yeah. So yeah, so that would be. I wish I knew all the speed reading that I know now when I was younger. Yeah. So I would probably get better results at school, and I would know more, and I would be wiser.
That was one of the aha moments, or was it the aha moment? The speed reading.
Well, I'm looking back. So I'm looking at what would make the difference to me. So obviously. In learning, you're learning new things, but you need to also unlearn. And actually, we've got a very good advice from a very wise man called Lao Tzu, who wrote a book, Tao Te King, which for a very, very long, long time was the second most read book on this planet. The first most read book is still the Bible. And now probably Harry Potter is the second. I don't know. Anyway, so he said, if you want to become knowledgeable, learn one new thing every day. Mm-hmm. You can easily read one book a day. Mm. With speed reading, easy, yeah. So you can learn 365 new things or 365 new books a year. But if you want to become wise, you have to unlearn one thing a day, and that's wisdom. Yeah, that's I wish I knew. So you're learning, you're kind of collecting information and stuff. It's going to go out of date, you know. But you need to unlearn what you know. Yeah. But kind of going back to nature, you know, how nature works, what works in, you know, 3,000 years for people in China, or people who build Stonehenge, or people who build St. Paul's Cathedral. Similar kind of principles, you know. Obviously, the context, the country, the climate is different, yeah. But the principle is still the same. So that's what we're trying to figure out with Feng Shui, and that's what Feng Shui is about. You know, how to utilize those kind of ancient principles that are still relevant with the latest research from environmental psychology to support the findings, you know, to kind of optimize our environment so people thrive, basically.
So when you use this concept of unlearning also, you could also say that the concept of education is changing, mainly because of the possibilities of technology nowadays.
Yes.
That means that you also have to get rid of things from the past, like the lecture theaters.
Yeah.
When are they still required, or as much as they are?
Well, I think choice is good. Some people still like to read books. Mm. I read digital books because as a speed reader, I'm going on a train. You know, I'll have to take 5 books with me. I don't want to carry 5 books. I've got all my books on my phone, mobile phone, or, you know, tablet. Yeah. So certain things will. But I think books won't disappear, but libraries might disappear. Yeah, because everybody go online. You can just you can print it if you want. Yeah. The same with certain aspects of the environment. So I think it's not about kind of getting rid of certain aspects because people might like them, but kind of enhancing them. So more possibilities, more choice, but certain things will die naturally. You know, If I give you an example from Henry Ford, so the guy who created a Ford company, and he said, if I ask people what they want, they would say, we want faster horses. I give them cars. That's a different level of thinking. That's what Einstein said. Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge because imagination created all the knowledge. And you need to go to the next level of thinking to solve the problem from the level where that thinking created that problem. Yeah. So there will be new things. So virtual learning is the future. Artificial intelligence is the future. You can't stop it. You know, most jobs will go. Because the computers will do it better. So already it's happening, you know. So
would you agree that changing the university campus environment, so physical, digital, and socially, that will create another pulse for the people, and therefore probably another vision, another perspective, and therefore you can come to a new wisdom.
So the technology is driving all the progress, as you can see. It's like, you know, online, you know, you can see that what's happening here. Most people in America like to watch a video instead of read a book. That's how it is. So visual kind of, because it's visual, still visual. Reading is visual. Watching a video is visual. So it's obviously much faster than listening to audiobook.
So actually the environment is a management tool.
But again, people are different. They will need different environments for different things. And obviously, we still need houses because of the weather and so on. But the virtual environment will kick in. And obviously, now we know more about how the brain works, you know, how we can measure what's happening in your mind, you know, when you're creative, when you're stressed, you know, you can measure the hormones and so on. So we can adjust the environment to people as the other way around, you know. In the old days, humanity had to adjust the environment, but they started to influence and manipulate the environment. And that's what we're doing. Obviously, on a kind of bad note, you know, ecology, not good, great now, and because we messed up a bit. But, you know, there will be new technologies helping clean up all that mess, yeah? But in terms of the learning environments, you know, virtual environments will be the future, really, yeah? In combination with physical environments, yeah.
Speaking about the future, what are your goals, aspirations for the coming 5 years?
So I'm working on my PhD in Feng Shui, as I said, and it's going to be about workspaces to see how Feng Shui principles can enhance people's performance, you know, stress reduction and so on. And also I'm interested, so I'm looking at all the technology, how we can design better environments with virtual reality, because actually we can put people in virtual environments and they'll give us feedback before we build buildings what they want, so we don't waste. And obviously now 3D printing is applied to buildings, you know, we can print anything, we can print any building you want, so then people will design their own buildings, you know, with the help of architects and so on, and the technology will provide that, So that's another kind of interesting aspect I'm interested in, how to kind of, and obviously analyze it. So with artificial intelligence, we can analyze any space, so you go and we just film a space, and the AI will analyze it, tell you what's working, what's not working, and depending on what people need, will adjust it, give you suggestions. So instead of, you know, me going to people's homes, there will be software, will be an app, and you walk around with your mobile phone, you just do it, and you get feedback about what's happening. So that's the next level. But the technology is there, but it's expensive. So it's kind of, it will take probably a few years to become available so people can use it.
That brings the idea pops up that flight simulators for pilots.
Exactly.
They are not sitting in a real plane, but they're doing all the things they have
to
do.
Exactly. So the same for learning driving a car, the same. You learn faster.
Is there something to for just universities could be something similar.
Absolutely,
that's what you're suggesting.
Well, that's what people like reading novels. It's simulation. It's simulation of reality. You're learning through a novel or through a story. That's why we liked it. So traditionally, that was traditional way of education, stories, you know. It's easy to remember story than kind of dry facts, So for a long, long time. But now things are changing and things are speeding up. So why not use virtual reality to that effect,
With all your knowledge and wisdom gathered over all these years, you are consulting your clients. Do you have any personal habits or
things
you do to apply it?
I live, I walk my talk. So I applied everything. So I sleep well, So I sleep in total darkness, because if you don't, your melatonin production doesn't work. And deep sleep is very important. Deep sleep is a holy grail of health. There's no doubt about it. If you don't get into deep sleep or you have regular deep sleep, you'll get health issues. And from that, all kinds of problems stem. Yeah. So if you have deep sleep, it's not about how many hours you sleep. It's about 90-minute cycle. Yeah, so it's 90 minutes. So if you use an alarm clock and you wake up in the middle of deep sleep, you kind of feel groggy. So you kind of need to time yourself. Yeah, yeah, I naturally wake up. Yeah, I don't use alarm clock. And so basically, if you can't do it, get one of those masks. Yeah, it's very simple. Fiverr on Amazon or whatever, and you've got the same effect. Yeah, so that's one thing. But even if you sleep in total darkness and you have Wi-Fi on, your brain thinks, oh, there's light, because light has electromagnetic spectrum. And your body feels, oh, there's light. There's no light, it's in total darkness, but so you need to switch off Wi-Fi. So minimize electromagnetic radiation. So that's the thing. Obviously, I've got air filters. I live in London, pollution. Air filters, lots of air cleansing plants. I obviously have a water filter, again. But remember, feng shui means wind, water. In the old days, there was pollution. Mm. They had problems with water. It's the same issues. The same issues. And obviously, our bodies are mostly water. Yeah, planet is mostly water. So that's how I meditate. It's kind of being in a good state. I eat well, obviously. Mostly, I eat like once a day, to activate my autophagy. Autophagy is kind of self-healing mechanism of your cells. What else did I do? So meditate and that. I've got lots of books. Digitized my whole library, but I've got still physically books, so I kind of feel. And I've got lots of creative things, you know. My environment is not kind of minimalistic, yeah? Slightly messy, yeah? So that's what I do.
Maybe a last question. Can you tell us about a time in your journey so far that you experienced the most difficult obstacle and that taught you a significant lesson about yourself?
Right. So, kind of personal, but I'll tell you, because of the spiritual health mentoring. So when I was about 4.5 years old, and I was brought up in Poland, in Catholic environment, so I was aware of God, concept of God, and pray and stuff. And we had to pray in the morning and evening. And once I was praying, and after some time, it's kind of boring when you pray, just three questions pop in my head. It's like, one was, what's beyond God? The other one was, how would the world would look like if I didn't exist? Yeah, and the first one was this infinity. I didn't know the word, but it just popped into my head. I was only 4.5, and those three words triggered me into something called, I had like a big aha moment, something called oneness or satori or enlightenment, where I become one with everything. I was aware I'm part of everything. I still have a little ego because I was small, yeah, but there was something bigger than me. Yeah, so that was my kind of awakening moment. And since then, the biggest challenge is really how to integrate that experience. Obviously, I had it like every time I meditate. Yeah, it's not difficult. You know, 60% of population has that experience on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not nothing kind of monks have it or Zen monks or, you know, people who meditate. Most people have that experience, you know. If they have a connection with nature, they have a feeling that they're part of something bigger. Yeah? Yeah. That's what enlightenment is. And so the biggest challenge is how to integrate into your life. So you're not kind of visiting it for half an hour or an hour every day, but like live that stuff. So that's my biggest challenge, really. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting better and better at this, yeah. So it's all good.
Again, somebody is listening to this, get inspired about what the opportunities are to manage a campus environment. What would be your advice, where to start and what to do?
Well, either I call somebody who sort of works from evidence-based, yeah? Because a lot of feng shui, and it looks like superstition, and it is, unfortunately. So it doesn't mean it's bad, but it looks like feng shui. So you need somebody like me who's got a kind of scientific approach to it and background, or get an environment psychologist. So any environment psychologist will give you very simple interventions that will boost wellness of people who work there, and also all the other aspects that you want to boost. And it's very straightforward, you know. Obviously, I studied it at University of Surrey, and it's a big campus, like 14,000 students. But unfortunately, they haven't applied although there's environment psychology, but they haven't applied it to wayfinding. It's like a maze. First day, it was like, how people find anything. There were some signs, not very good. After a year, I was advising other students who've been kind of studying there for a few years where to find things. It's like, you know, just create a nice space. Obviously, not all universities are big, but, you know, kind of so people feel at home, you know. They usually should feel within 1 or 2 days know where things are and shouldn't get lost. So that's a simple kind of, but also creating spaces, different facing for different people, for different kind of learning, because people think differently, you know, and not everybody's creative. You know, I'm creative, I can be creative in any environment, it doesn't matter to me. Actually, you know, the same like speed reading, you know, reading books in different environments kind of boosts your retention level, not just one environment, So the same with this, but some people need environments, kind of inspiring environments, you know. So you can create that. It's very straightforward, So there, so call somebody who's an expert in that. Work with architects, work with interior designers who have that sort of understanding, you know. Biophilia is very popular now, biophilic design. So just adding nature will make a big, big difference. And there's a lot of research on that. So quite often it's very simple, just utilizing what already is there, kind of enhancing certain things and removing the stresses that are necessary. Basically, so and check my blog here. So mostly I blog about feng shui things with kind of research from environmental psychology and my kind of insights and what people are interested. So it's both about kind of home environments but also workplaces.
I will add the link down to the video so that people can find you. And well, Jan, I'm you're not only a speed read, but you also speed talk. So you gave us so much information and also wisdom. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.